This is Susan Williams. I'm in the MFA program in creative writing at Virginia Commonwealth University, and I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's March 14th, 2002, and I'm speaking with Eleanor Ross Taylor. My first question was that I do think of you as being part of one of the most brilliant and influential literary circles in the 20th century, with writers and critics like Robert Penn Warren, John Crow Ransom, Alan Tate, Randall Jarrell, Robert Lowell, your own husband, Peter Taylor. And I wonder if you would just talk a little bit about what that was like, about how it affected your life, how it affected your writing to be in a group like that.
Well, it made all the difference in the world. And it began with my being a student of Alan Tate and Caroline Gordon in Greensboro at the Woman's College of the University of North Carolina, that wonderful president, Jackson, there, who decided that we couldn't compete with Chapel Hill except in the arts, and so he got the Tates. And they were so encouraging to me from the very beginning, and really that was the beginning. Now, so I guess then I got a scholarship to Vanderbilt and studied with Donald Davidson, and Alan Tate, of course, got me that, and he did all sorts of things for me. And then later on, after Peter and I were married, Peter had a job at Kenyon College, and we got to know the Ransoms very well, and that was a wonderful period for us, though I don't think that there was a literary influence in any way. But Peter had known Alan Tate as a student at Southwestern when he was, after he had dropped out of Vanderbilt and had his little stint in real estate. He took some classes at Southwestern and one in writing, and he met them there. So Peter and I met in Mount Eagle when we both visited Alan Tate and Caroline Gordon. And the Tates had taken a cottage that winter with Robert Lowell and Jean Stafford, and they were all writing books, you know, and so we were up there for the weekend, and that's when Peter and I met. And then later on, After we were married, I had long admired Randall Jarrell because not only for his poetry but for his brilliant reviews in the magazines, and so I knew that Peter had been at Vanderbilt at the same time he was, and so I made Peter look Randall up, and I wanted to be introduced to Randall Jarrell and admire him, and then Peter got Rattle a job at Greensboro, where we were at that time, and my alma mater.
To my everlasting gratitude, in fact. And so, were any of the other?
Well, Robert Penn Warren. He came to an arts forum in Greensboro when the Tates were there, and that was my first meeting with him. But then we did see them off and on over the years, and he was just such a wonderfully gregarious man, you know. And so, and in fact, he was instrumental in helping my brothers. My brothers had their novels published by Houghton Mifflin with Houghton Mifflin fellowships.
What were your brothers? Books.
My brother James' book is called They Don't Dance Much, and it's supposed to be, you know, sort of a little classic noir fiction, and Higgins is always mentioning it when he writes reviews. But I introduced him to the Tates because he was writing this novel. The girl he was in love with had just jilted him, so the only thing he could do was write a novel. and they liked it, and they thought he, you know, liked his writing, and helped him get printed in the Partisan Review and got his novel published.
That's wonderful. So they were very supportive of...
They were wonderful to students, and Caroline particularly always said, you owe it to young writers to help them. And she did. They were just, and of course they helped Robert Lowell.
Oh yes,
a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful when there are people who will do that, and not everybody does, but that's great. So were any of the others particularly close? I mean,
I think that the Jarrells were, and well, Peter and Kat Lowell roomed together, of course, at Kenyon.
Yes.
So they were close, very close over the years, and we had lots of visits back and forth with the Lowells and with Cal by himself, with both his wives. And then our friendship with the Jarrells was very close, too. Mackie Jarrell was, we shared a duplex with Randall's first wife, Mackie, and with him. when our daughter was just a baby in Greensboro, and just saw them constantly. And nothing could be nicer than to have close contact with one of the really poetic geniuses of the, as I think Randall was, don't you?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. He was the reason I went to UNCG.
Did you have a class with him?
He died before I was eligible for his first class.
Yeah,
I was very disappointed.
Those were very unhappy years for him. Yeah. Mackie was an interesting person. They had met in Texas, and he was but she was not a writer, of course.
Yes.
She was a scholar.
Yeah, he was married to Mary Jarrell, I guess. When I was there. And I didn't know her. I mean, I saw her around campus. Well, since you've mentioned Jarrell, and I do always think of Taylors and Jarrells sort of inseparably, I just wonder if you'd talk a little bit about your relationship with Jarrell. I mean, I know he admired your work enormously, and, you know, did you look at each other's work?
Well, we were living in that duplex together, and of course I had written poems for a long time, and I began writing poems again, and Peter said, you ought to show these to Randall, and I, you know, was reluctant, and so he took me over across the hall to the Jarrell duplex and said, I've taken the little girl by the hand and brought her here to show you her poems. And Randall read them, and he was very, just very nice about them. And he actually got my poems printed. He sent some of them to various magazines to, and had me, Accent was the first magazine I think I ever printed in, because Randall sent them there. And then he wrote an introduction, as you may know, to my first book.
And he was not necessarily the kindest of critics sometimes.
He wasn't. But I remember once when he took me to his office to seriously go over a whole batch of poems with me, and how marvelous he was in understanding exactly what you meant when you were writing a poem. He really had so much insight into the meaning of a poem, and he had wonderful little suggestions. Like he'd say, in this line, I think you might repeat that word again, you know, that, and make an echo of in a line. And it was always a wonderful suggestion. It slowed it down and emphasized it, you know. But
so you learned a lot.
So I learned a lot from him, really.
Would you
But he was not, you know, didactic in any way. Hmm.
So was it more in the matter of technique or in the approach to poetry in general?
I'm not sure. I don't think it was technique. I think it was just sort of getting the, you know, the right, putting me on the right track and saying, I don't think this poem works, and the others that did.
That's a wonderful gift.
It is.
To have. The adjectives that I see most often and that come to my mind most often about your work are words like unique and original. And sometimes I see you mentioned in the same sentence with Emily Dickinson or Marianne Moore or Elizabeth Bishop, but not usually with the suggestion that you were influenced by them, just more that you're all exemplars of originality. But I wondered if there were poets that you considered to have been an influence on your work.
Well, the first, of course, I loved Emily Dickinson and read a lot of Emily Dickinson early. But the first poet that really made me feel that poetry was contemporary and that it could relate to me right now in a way, you know, that all those wonderful heroines of poetry and heroes didn't, was Edna St. Vincent Millay. And I read her when I was a teenager in school and just fell in love with her poems. And I think it just gave me a feeling of being able to approach current everyday life. But as for being original, I think that every poet, in a way, is original, because I think that a work of art really reflects the psyche of the artist, and sometimes it's a problem, sometimes it's don't you think a sort of joy or something like that, and oftentimes the artist doesn't really know what it is they're getting rid of in this or expressing in this poem. They're reaching for understanding, I think, lots of times, whether they know it or not. And this is what makes them, don't you think, original?
I've heard people say, too, that they don't, and I find it myself, that I don't know where the poem is going.
Oh, absolutely.
When I start on it, I just know that I'm engaged by it.
Yes, it's almost as though there's a voice leading you in these things. It really is. It sounds ridiculous, but...
Yeah, I have to be a little careful using the term channeling, but that does come to mind sometimes. Yeah. So how old were you when you started writing poetry?
Well, I think the first poem I ever wrote was when I was 9 years old, and the Norwood News offered a prize to the student who wrote a poem that they would print in the paper, and so I won.
Well, congratulations.
And then later on, the Charlotte Observer. Did you see the Charlotte Observer?
We used to get the Charlotte Observer.
But you don't date back to the Sunshine Page, which was a kind of children's supplement during the Depression, which young people, children really, could print stories and poems, and they paid... Let's see, they paid $2 for the prize one and $1 for the second prize or something like that. And let me tell you, that meant a lot to a child on the farm in the Depression.
Oh, yeah, that was good money then.
And so I sent in a lot of things to that, and that was...
I wondered, because it seems to me that so many people who write poetry in particular start very young
doing it. I did.
Yeah, and I'm wondering... Because you had mentioned Millay and Dickinson particularly, it seems to me that the climate for women poets has just changed enormously for the better in the past 30 years. And I just wondered, you know, what it was like being a woman poet back, you know, in the 50s, say, when things were very conservative. Was it harder to get published?
I didn't think so. I never felt any discrimination at all. I never suffered from that in any way that I know of. Of course, I didn't send poems out. I really did not, because my productive and when I began printing was after I was married and after I had a baby, and my husband's career really came first, and I didn't press my career at all. So it was not something that I worried about. I thought about whether I was being discriminated against or whether I was having a hard time.
So Wilderness of Ladies didn't come out until, 1960, something like that?
I think it was, 1960.
Yeah, I had wondered, because I had something of a sense sometimes in college that there were poets and then there were women poets, and that there was...
I think that some of the, I must say that I do feel that Edna St. Vincent Millay was discriminated against by some of the, you know, the new critics, and don't you think so, in some of those essays? And really unfairly, just because it was a kind of inherited prejudice against women.
That's what I've wondered. I mean,
I think it did.
Because we were sometimes given the impression that... You know, we didn't study women poets. I think Emily Dickinson was the only woman poet that was taught when I was at UNCG.
But I never felt it. I didn't. I was not.
I was just curious about that, because clearly some people like Bishop managed to transcend it without feeling the effect.
Well, I think by the time she came along, too, that there was... And you know, Randall was one of the most enthusiastic people about women poets. He really
was.
And he loved Elizabeth Bishop's poems. And he was always praising them, you know, privately and publicly.